Karma Muni has now manifested this aerial mansion or flying city to provide a residence for Devahuti, and for tens of thousands of years, which is a long time, she's been with her husband in the forest, engaging in Brahminical austerities and other activities. So her dress had become old and tattered and, you know, not nice. And her hair, similarly matted, just like a forest dweller. The previous princess luxuries were gone, and she had become quite accustomed to it, so it was not a position of hardship. But this creation was, the intention behind the creation was to provide a facility for he, Karna, and his wife Devahuti to be in a different circumstance, so that children could be conceived in at this different circumstance. Not that sages, that's a regular routine for sages, is use their mystic power and create another circumstance. But he had that capacity. And it's describing her reaction to that capacity, and specifically previous verses are, there's this lake that he requested her to take her bath in, and by taking bath in this special lake, all of these prior minimalistic appearances of her externally would change. So that's what happened. Text 35. She was amazed to find herself surrounded by thousands of maids in the presence of her husband and to witness his yogic power. So these personalities, along with the city, there were people. Gandharvas, that's indicated elsewhere. Devahuti saw everything miraculously done, yet when brought before her husband, she could understand that it was all due to his great yogic mystic power. She understood that nothing was impossible for a yogi like Kardava Muni. Mystic power, Prabhupada explains, is simply subtle manipulation of laws. So there's laws that by blunt material senses they can be observed. And this causes that can be the technology, cause and effect. And then manipulation of the cause and effect can produce things. And so the industries are developed based upon manipulation of the grosser laws of nature. We can't violate the laws of nature, but we can recognize and manipulate them and do things. Yogis know subtler laws of nature. Just give real quick reference. In the 11th canto, in Uddhava Gita section, they're described that there's four different types of sound, and some of them are not audible. This is, you know, within a human being. And so this is, you know, it's a Sankhya-like piece of information. That's just material law. And then there's Shabda, spiritual aporusheya shabd, the transcendental sound, that acts differently than the material sound and manipulating material sound. So he was a yogi, and who oversees material nature? Supersoul. Prakriti is overseen by Purusha, the Supersoul. And so the yogi, by connecting with Supersoul, consciousness can be refined and understanding of the subtler material laws can be perceived. And by various means, which we don't know, those laws can be cause and effect moved and do something. Walk on water, fly in the air, become very small, become very big. Mystic powers. To us it's fantastic, but it's simply manipulation of subtle laws. Many times I've described first hearing a radio, or he used some other word. He was curious, you know, is there a band inside, like a musical orchestra inside this box? Because out of the box comes music. So he was using that as an example to say, while it's childish, it's a sign of intelligence. He gave another example of one boy who heard a sound come from the drum. So he wanted to know, where's the sound coming from the drum? So he broke the head of the drum to see where the sound is coming from inside. You know, to inquire about the cause of some effect. It's the sign of intelligence. And you real intelligence is what's the cause of all causes that has no other cause other than himself or itself or whatever that absolute truth is. Be inquisitive into the nature of the absolute truth is topmost intelligence. So those that have that inquisitiveness and stay with it and don't get distracted by the temporary can achieve mystic powers. But that's not the wonderful thing, achieving mystic powers. Achieving unalloyed devotion to the personality of Godhead, that's the wonderful thing. And such persons may, if the Lord so desires, exhibit mystic powers. They may not. So Kardamoni had such power. One may not. Doesn't mean Kardamoni is a greater perfect person than somebody that does not. It's just that was an ornament that he had, and so he used it in the broader sense of the service to his father, Lord Brahma, and the service to his father, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the service of progenitor. It's just, he's a great mystic, amazing to her. But, you know, it wasn't show-off, it was part of his service to his father and the personality of Godhead. And he chose to do that way and came before her. She was, because the previous verse, she just in the purport of the previous verse, text 34. When her husband asked her to enter the lake, she saw the maid servants, and they took care of her. Everything was done within the water, and as soon as she thought of her beloved husband, Kardamuni, she was brought before him without delay. These are some of the powers attained by perfect yogis. Semicolon. They can immediately execute anything they desire. Very powerful and pure devotee at the same time, which means whatever he had, it was only used as part of his service to the personality of Godhead. So text 37, the sage could see that Devahuti had washed herself clean and was shining forth as though no longer his former wife. She had regained her own original beauty as the daughter of a prince. Actually, she was the daughter of Manu. Dressed in excellent robes, her charming breasts duly girded, she was waited upon by 1,000 Gandharva girls. O destroyer of the enemy, his fondness for her grew, and he placed her on the aerial mansion. This is Vimana that he created. Purport. Before her marriage, when Devahuti was brought by her parents before the sage Kardama, she was the perfectly beautiful princess, and Kardamuni remembered her former beauty. But after her marriage, when she was engaged in the service of Kardamuni, she neglected to care for her body like a princess, since there was no means for such care. Semicolon. Her husband was living in a cottage, and since she was always engaged in serving him, her royal beauty disappeared, and she became just like an ordinary maidservant. Now, after being bathed by the Gandharva girls, by the order of Kardama Muni's yogic power, she regained her beauty, and Kardama Muni felt attracted to the beauty she had shown before the marriage. The real beauty of a young woman is her breasts. When Kardama Muni saw the breasts of his wife so nicely decorated, increasing her beauty many times, he was attracted, even though he was a great sage. Sripad Shankaracharya has therefore warned that the transcendentalists, he has warned the transcendentalists that one who is after transcendental realization should not be attracted by the raised breasts of a woman, because they are nothing but an interaction of fat and blood within the body. Text 38. Though seemingly attached to his beloved consort while served by the Gandharva girls, the sage did not lose his glory, which was mastery over his self. In the aerial mansion, Kardama Muni with his consort shone as charmingly as the moon in the midst of the stars in the sky, which was open in ponds at night. Report. The mansion was in the sky, and therefore the comparison to the full moon and stars is very beautifully composed in this verse. Kardama, when he looked at the full moon and the girls who surrounded his wife Devahuti, seemed just like the stars. On a full moon night, the stars and the moon together form a beautiful constellation. Similarly, in that aerial mansion in the sky, Kardama Muni, with his beautiful wife and the damsels surrounding them, appeared like the moon and stars on a full moon night. In one sense, it's a little puzzling. What's going on here in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Just describing bodily features and the attractiveness and this seeming attraction of Kardama Muni to his wife when she was looking like this instead of like that. Why did he do it in the first place? Well, a few things. One is the features of, the point is being made in the purport, features of opulence have the potential of exciting material desire and hang for of opulence beyond this present standard of one's circumstances, it incites passion. And so the endeavor to get that opulence or that thing or whatever it is, it's the fruit of passion. Material involvement in the whole material energy has to do with the same core spirit, wishing to be the Purusha of Prakriti, the enjoyer of matter. And enjoyment then is facilitated by objects and senses that perceive the objects, and a mind that says, ah, or or, you know, I like, I don't like. And that's material existence in all of its variegatedness. The same principles apply. And for a person like Kardamoni, he's far, far beyond that. And since he's far, far beyond that, it comes this question, why? And then another question, it seems, the final verse is seemingly attracted, and the prior verse says he became attracted. So why did he do this? So he would become attracted, and so that passion would stir. And when passion was stirred, then it invites what follows passion that's stirred, male-female attraction on the material platform. The other is, it's seemingly, so what's the principle? It's a principle that Srila Prabhupada instructed in a variety of ways, in a variety of circumstances, was being contented in whatever circumstance we find ourselves. It's a chapter 6 message of Dhyan Yoga. A yogi must be neutral. And if you're neutral, but you're not an impersonalist, if you're an impersonalist and neutral, you do nothing. Karma sannyas. And if you're Arjuna or a devotee, then you're neutral, but you engage in the senses and the objects of the senses with one purpose, service of the Supreme Lord. Now, this is unique. Again, it's not a cookie-cutter example where everyone that's qualified like Kardamoni is going to follow the same pattern. But he had the capacity, and so he was using that capacity to make an arrangement, accepting the arrangement without attachment. Anasaktasya vishayan yattarham upayunjitaha. Engaging that capacity that he had in a service to the personality of Godhead with anasaktasya, without attachment. It doesn't exactly give. Could the same have been accomplished by some other means? Most likely. But it's something like, in Prabhupada's example, Prabhupada was picked up at the airport in some big limousine and at a time when the devotees didn't have wealth, didn't have prosperity. But they wanted to honor Prabhupada this way. And so a reporter, when interviewing Prabhupada, one of his first questions was, Swamiji, when they picked you up, they had this big, that sannyasis are supposed to be renounced, and what's going on here? And Prabhupada's immediate reply is, not only they should have picked me up in a golden car, because the spiritual master is to be seen as the representative of God, and all things of opulence are meant for God and His representative. Now, at the same time, so he was able to accept that and bear the criticism to to make a certain point, that the point in his accepting was, my understanding is, it's good for, he was doing things that were good for the spiritual nourishment of his disciples. Now, it's certainly possible that he could have done something different, like refuse those arrangements and take something very simple. Insist that it's just something very simple, and that's certainly another channel that he could have taken. But I'm not, well, something that I've heard is, I think it's the Pope or some VIP insists on very simple transportation facilities when he goes here and there. Whoever it is, it's another way of instructing. So Cardinal, when he is choosing this way, for whatever the reason, because it's without his attachment to that facility, and you know, yogi has the capacity to extend or to withdraw, and then look at later on, he walks away from the whole facility, and his good wife. It says his spirit is the mood of service to the Supreme Lord. Period, and nothing else. So, in his, he can or he does not exhibit his capacities. Sometimes Prabhupada was asked, Swami, do you have mystic powers? And sometimes he would say, the devotee, according to the will of Krishna, can exhibit mystic powers. But generally, a pure devotee does not exhibit mystic powers, because people will become simply attracted to the mystic power and think, oh, I want some mystic power too, and miss the point altogether. The point is not attaining mystic power. The point is to utilize whatever in service to Krishna, and if Krishna so desires, something may come, something may not come. Now that position is, it's tough in when the spirit that brings one to the material world is to be the enjoyer, independent enjoyer. And so how strong is the attraction for material opulence? And expecting it or coveting it or somewhere inside hankering for it, or when it comes, seeing as the sign of Krishna's recognizing me, because now I have this. I mean, a beautiful example of this is Sudama. The not having and the peacefulness of mind when not having was due to his not just his brahminical qualification of being learned and therefore detached, but his unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Unalloyed devotion to Krishna. A kind of detachment, and that kind of detachment doesn't need to be I have nothing detachment. It can be surrounded by opulence and not attached to the opulence. Detachment. So again, Prabhupada's a lesson of the Bhagavatam and a lesson that our founder Acharya consistently gave is have or have not, be whatever the external circumstance is, accept that as Krishna's arrangement and engage in his service according to Krishna's arrangement. We make practical endeavors of so many ways, but we accept Krishna's arrangement. And not accepting Krishna's arrangement, the mind can't be peaceful, whatever it is. It's we can't be peaceful because the heart is not peaceful in our relationship with Krishna. And if our relationship with Krishna is strong, that shelter taking Krishna is strong than anything. So he's utilizing this mystic power for his purpose, and he's seemingly attracted, but not seemingly appreciating the beauty, the natural physical beauty of his princess wife, lovely adorned and served by 1,000, that's a lot of assistants, in a fabulously opulent mystic city that flies here and there. The upcoming verses describe the places that the Vimana went, and they went all over the universe. The Karna was quite a personality. Once again, the glory is not his capacity, mystic capacity. His glory is his unmixed devotion, and Devahuti's also. And from that flows all varieties of things that are truly amazing. To have the personality of Godhead as your son. Truly amazing. But they were qualified. So our focus in our own practical lives is to become qualified. These are outstanding examples of qualified souls manifesting undoubtedly different than any of us are going to ever experience. But what's the real glory? The real, mentioned here, the real glory of Karnama was his self-control. Mastery over himself. So that wasn't lost by the circumstance, wasn't created by having nothing, and it wasn't lost when he had something. It's something that was of his essence. That's our goal. Become fixed in Krishna. Is there any discussion? Your service, your morning service. Krishna's kind to you, gives you some service. Over here.
Guru Maharaj, I have two. I don't know if I'm able to express the questions, but the first one was about neutrality.
First one is about
neutrality, being
neutrality.
And
Keep going.
I sometimes feel that I have tried to be neutral when there are, just to avoid triggers. Just to avoid the triggers and getting aggravated or getting like...
Well, that's a beginning, but it's not complete.
So it ends up always a failure because the neutrality that's coming, it's not really real. I just want to...
It's a beginning. It's a beginning.
How... what should I do, like...
Krishna consciousness. I mean, you're working with the outside, but while working with the outside, you work on the inside. I mean, just take this one example because it doesn't pertain to you. The beauty of a woman is her breasts. So Shankaracharya says avoid it. because here's what it is. You know, it's just by saying that, that's a beginning. You know, just with knowledge there can be detachment. But that's like the beginning. And then they keep going. And, you know, for the devotee, it's become attracted to Krishna. You have Krishna, you have a male or female body for whichever the gender is, or type of attraction, compared to the beauty of Krishna. Because what to do is cultivate attraction for Krishna, and that the ways that we've been given to cultivate attraction for Krishna. The bhakti principle can dissolve the problem. The problem is the attraction for the temporary. And the triggers is, you know, the mind. Something, and then it's perceived by the mind in a certain way, and it controls our life. So attraction for Krishna. We want the mind to go to the name. And that's a beginning. And not to other. Even the other is, you know, part of God's creation. We want the mind to go to Krishna. And then, by cultivation, the cleansing and so forth, the attraction becomes spontaneous. A very nice example coming to mind is, I forget the name, the wrestler and his gorgeous wife, and a festival is taking place in Ramanuja's presence, and this fellow is just staring at his beautiful wife when the deity is passing by. And that, you know that story, Ramanujacharya. So the Ramanuja notices and says, you know what, this man is shameless. Here comes the Lord, and he can't take his eyes off of his beautiful wife. So he tells his assistants, bring him. They brought him. You're doing like this, it's shameless. To all the eyes of my beloved are so, I can't take my eyes off. So if I show you eyes that were superior in beauty to her eyes, would you be able to be detached? So he brings him to Ranganath, and he accepts. He became the beauty, transcendental beauty. So he left his beautiful wife and with her beautiful eyes. So that's a lust kind of attraction becoming a transcendental attraction. So that the trigger may be triggering lust, and the trigger may be triggering other emotions. So you control the emotion. make some distance between you and the object that triggers. You know, it's not complete. It's a beginning. And then you work on the inside.
Just like from last time, this time, Mother Devahuti's position, how she was doing a lot of service and a lot of austerity for a long time. And then she came to this position of now giving birth to children. And she seemed to be not attached to either position. I was just like thinking about some services that sometimes I get engaged in, and there's like after a point it's like I'm just doing because I like it, and it's then when something happens, then there's again this I'm not sure what I have to ask, but my thoughts are again how what should I like think about when this
when what?
When
Well, it's both sides. When the I do things because I like it, and you recognize that, I mean, supposing you don't recognize it. There's the don't recognize it, there's the recognize it, and then there's not appreciating a particular service because I don't like it. And then there's doing it anyway despite I don't like it. So there's those four options. In all of the four options, it's a mix. Like, don't like, do, don't do, because of. It's a mix. So knowledge is one, brings one kind of detachment. Bhakti brings a more complete kind of detachment. So go to the bhakti principle. It's similar to the prior response. Become attached to simply being in the service of Krishna. In the service of Krishna means so many things, but in the service of Krishna. Simply because that's who I am. And then that's who I am brings the detachment from the mind that's attracted, not attracted. I like, I don't like. The mix. It's just don't feed the mind. You feed the soul. The position of being in Krishna's service. And there's a back and forth when we're in the mixed position because we're mixed. And maybe, you know, at times stronger over on the mind being attracted, not attracted, and liking, not liking, and step back from that. Don't trust the mind. There's some nice verses, just hearing them, hearing Prabhupada speak on them. Canto 5, Chapter 6, the early section, verses 2 through 5, about don't trust the mind. We not only trust the mind, we identify with it too much. We should instead be using it and directing it in service. And then the signal from the spiritual mind is contentment, being in service to Krishna. I mean, that's circumstances of life are always changing. There are certain themes and patterns even within those changing circumstances. And it's all, at least the path of sadhana bhakti is meant to bring us same as the first, you know, to the position of being attached to Krishna. And instead of attached to the temporary. You don't place great value in the mind and the temporary and the liking, not liking. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned about Gautamuni using the mystic powers in a very devotional, spiritual way, and also you gave the example of Prabhupada accepting...
You're mumbling, and it's not clear what you're saying. Speak.
You mentioned the example of Gautamuni using all of the opulences and mystic powers in a very devotional way towards the service of Krishna.
Well, he used some of them. I don't know what all of them are.
And you also gave the example of Prabhupada accepting all of the opulence that was coming his way and using for the spiritual upliftment of his devotees.
Yeah.
So for me, my question is, whenever some opulence strike, chance of some opulence coming, my conditional nature is as such that I tend to not accept the opulence for the fear of maybe becoming more conditioned and not thinking about doing...
That's wise.
So I'm just trying to understand, Maharaj, if I continue this, would I become stuck? Or
maybe.
So
it depends on bhakti. Am I doing this because I'm... It's like her question. Am I doing this because I'm averse to I might get entangled? or am I doing it because I wish to grow in bhakti? It's the exercise of the bhakti muscle as opposed to the I don't want to suffer muscle. Yes, it's possible to get stuck. It's possible to become an impersonalist. Very easy. And it's very easy to become a devotee. And then we accept and don't accept based on, is it going to be favorable for bhakti? I'll give a little example. Prabhupada example. without the detail, some of the Udupi sannyasis in some dialogue with ISKCON devotees were appreciating the contribution that Srila Prabhupada made. So one of the things that they did is they showed Your Ever Well Wisher, one of those documentaries, and it showed Prabhupada sitting in Golden Gate Park surrounded by hippies dancing and doing that thing. And their comment was, we could never do that. We would fall down. We could never do that. So best to know you can never do that and don't do that. Best to know what your boundaries are, your capacities are. Yogeshwara told me this little story. I don't know if I shared it here. He was with Prabhupada in Paris, and one of the Prabhupada's female disciples had previously been living in Bangkok, a French girl, and she had gone back to Paris to visit her home. She received the Bhagavad Gita, she became a devotee, she became an initiated devotee. So she then had some communication with her former employer in Bangkok, an Indian gentleman, wealthy person. Would this Indian gentleman be willing to sponsor financially and whatever other to bring Krishna consciousness to Bangkok? Some devotees to come make some presentation and speaking and kirtan and this and that. And the man agreed. So then the lady devotee asked Yogeshwara, would you be willing to come and, give leadership to this project? And Yogeshwara was not so sure that he could not fall down. So he asked Prabhupada, here's the situation, I've been given this invitation, should I go? And the way that Yogeshwara described, it was like you felt in presence as you leaned forward. He said, yes, you should go. The entrepreneurial giving Krishna consciousness in a creative way came out really strongly. Then he expressed his doubt. But Prabhupada, this man he's an Indian man, but he doesn't follow anything, and he's just very wealthy, I'm sure very proud, and the whole atmosphere is going to be uninviting or difficult. And I don't have the flow of the conversation correctly. He said you something to the effect that you take up service to Krishna and Krishna will protect you. And then Yogeshwara was still not sure. He said, well, should I take my wife? And then Prabhupada leaned forward and said, you need your wife to protect you. Meaning, Krishna will protect you. I don't know what happened after that, but it's certainly possible. It happened many, many times when the devotees took risks and they fell. So each of us have to be very careful about risk taking and not fall. Just, don't go and that's another risk, and go and that's a risk. Accept something and there's a risk. Don't accept something and there's a risk. You're not protected by saying no. You're protected by saying yes to Krishna. And then, you know, the prudence of where's the line, or what is appropriate, what is inappropriate. But that's where the consideration should go, not just a blanket impersonal no. Accepting things that can be used in Krishna's service depends on the strength of bhakti. And if the bhakti strength isn't so great, like her comment about triggers and your comment about something, we have to know what our capacity is. But so we nourish the capacity by strong hearing and chanting and the mood of connecting with Krishna through that medium, and then serving the devotees in that medium. And the world around us is surcharged with opposition, so we have to be careful. But being careful doesn't mean we're frozen. Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.